Hello and welcome into the KE Report. I'm your host, Shad Markowitz, and I'm speaking today with Mark Chandler, managing partner at Bannockburn Global Forex, and also the editor of the Mark to Market website, which we will put a link to down below. Mark, it's always great having you on the show to wrap up the week and take a look at all the different markets that we have jostling around. And I guess the big news from last week was that the Fed did finally do their first rate hike. It was a 25 basis point hike. A lot of people were expecting that. That was pretty well telegraphed. I think for the most part, the markets digested it well. But over the course of this week, starting with James Bullard and then some other Fed heads and chairs have come out and suggested that maybe it's time to get more aggressive and that maybe they need to start doing 50 basis point hikes just because inflation is still up. You know, our recent CPI reading was at 7.9%, so you could say it's up near 8%, and some people are expecting it to keep rising due to some of the price increases we've seen recently. What do you make of this new motion by the Fed to get more aggressive and maybe start doing some of these 50 basis point hikes?
Yeah, I think you're spot on there. I think that there has been a consensus forming at the Fed to raise rates 50 basis points as early as the next meeting, which is May 4th. The market is pricing in 2 50 basis point rate hikes this year. That means 200 basis points of tightening still to come. I think there's an agreement basically to march the Fed funds rate to what's neutral. And in the March dot plot, the neutral was seen between 2.25 and 250 basis points. So I think the Fed is aiming to get there, and then they can re-examine things. And so I think to get there, we're going to get that, those 50 basis point increases. And I think that the recent batch of economic data we saw in recent days, which included a drop in weekly initial jobless claims to its lowest level since 1969, and many people expected the flash PMI, Purchasing Managers Index, for March to show some weakness, given the war, given higher inflation, given commodity prices, but instead, the PMI rose. So from the Fed's point of view, this shows the resilience of the U.S. economy, continued price pressures, and a tight labor market. So when Powell was asked about what's stopping them from raising 50 basis points, he said nothing. He said nothing stopping them. So I think that's the most likely scenario now, 50 basis points at the May meeting and possibly even at the June meeting.
Well, when they talk about normalizing rates and doing it around 2.5% to 3%, you know, based on the old Taylor rule, they would actually need to get the interest rates up over where inflation is for it to, you know, by a percentage point or so. So they would still be far under what the inflation rate would be. And so it would still be very negative real rates. I mean, right now, even though there's been a massive move in the 10-year, it's up at 2.49% right now. Well, if inflation is at 8%, you know, that's still a negative 4.5% real rate. And so wouldn't they need to get the Fed funds rate up closer to where inflation is for them to quote unquote normalize it?
Yeah, I think you made a good point. And I think that the way the Fed thinks about it is not so much inflation being not a snapshot, but like more of a video. And the Federal Reserve expects inflation to be falling later this year. And so even though it stays high above target, so the issue is how do we calculate real interest rates? So the back of the envelope calculation is exactly what you say. Subtract inflation from the nominal rate, and that gives you your real rate. But I think the way from a policymaking point of view, from a business point of view, you want to take the sort of where inflation is going to be forward-looking, not where it was last month, but where it's going to be, say, at the end of this year or at the end of next year. It's still elevated, but not as high as this 8%. So I think you're right as well that many people in the market don't think that inflation's peaked quite yet, even though the base effect will begin working in our favor.
Yeah, I was wondering about that too on the base effect. We heard a lot of lip service about base effect last year, and it turned out to be off base. But in this case, we've already had really high inflation in 2021. So as we roll into 2022 and we get into those summer months, it's possible that it will start trending down just because year over year, it's not going to be that different than it was last year when things first started spiking. So do you think that'll help the Fed in that sense, that you will see that, you know, the year over year numbers start trending down? And if they're raising rates into an inflation rate that's coming down, does that help equalize things?
Yeah, I think that's what the Fed's counting on. I mean, I think that no one I know is really talking about, say, 7% Fed funds target. And so besides the base effect, Powell's talked about some other factors that should help. For example, he thinks that the wage, as COVID eases and we turn into an endemic rather than a pandemic, that's going to bring more people into the labor market. And it's also going to shift prices from the goods prices that we've been seeing more to services. So in general, I think that you're right that the Federal Reserve is going to be, we should be preparing for a more aggressive tightening from the Fed. It's not going to be enough this year. They'll probably start to tighten a little bit next year.
Well, before we move on from interest rates, there's just one more observation. That is, I just mentioned a second ago, the surging Treasury yields. I mean, it's really fascinating to see how much on a percentage basis the 10-year has moved up. Again, it's at 2.49 at the time of this recording. But what's interesting to me is the 2-year on the front end of the curve has moved up to 2.3. And so there's only a 19 bip spread between the 2 and the 10. And as a result, that is a really flat yield curve for the Fed to have started this rate hiking cycle. Is it possible that the front end of the curve keeps moving higher and eventually the yield curve inverts? And what would that mean?
Yeah, so I think if we're talking about Fed funds going up another 200 basis points this year, there's probably room for the 2-year yield to get closer to 250, maybe a little bit above there even. So yeah, so I think that we're looking at the curve to probably go inverted. Already some parts of it are. But Powell had some interesting take on that. He says that the Fed staff's research suggests that the better guide is like the 18-month yield curve. And because the market expects more Fed tightening, of course, say the year and a half, the 18-month rate is higher than current Fed funds. So I agree with you. I think a lot of people in the market know that most of our modern, I should say all of our modern recessions have been preceded by the inversion of the curve. But the Federal Reserve is taking it, I think, with a more of a grain of salt, seeing how high inflation is right now, how strong the labor market is, thinking that the economy can withstand Fed funds at, say, 2.5%, while inflation is running stronger and unemployment is falling. And we're going to get another employment report next week, and the early call is for about 450,000 increase in jobs, which will just reinforce that message. The market's already pricing that in for their May meeting. The market now has almost, a 77% chance of a 50 basis point hike at that May meeting.
Well, you had mentioned to me before we started recording that it's not just the Fed and the U.S. Central Bank that's considering maybe stepping up their hiking. There's other central banks considering it. I'd love you to discuss that as well.
Yeah, sure. Probably the biggest one next is the Bank of Canada. They meet April 13th. And as we sit here today, ahead of the weekend, the market's pricing in more than a 90% chance of a 50 basis point hike by the Bank of Canada. And they will also likely make some announcement about the balance sheet. What's happening in Canada, not only is the economy strong, and we've seen like a strong labor market, strong manufacturing sector, and of course being commodity backed, being commodity exposed is another factor. But what happened the past week is it gets us back thinking about the policy mix. So in addition to the tight monetary policy, when Trudeau ran during the campaign last year, he promised all kinds of fiscal spending, and people were questioning how that was going to come about. And we saw it this past week where Trudeau has a deal with the New Democrats, and a lot of his program that he campaigned on and the New Democrat program calls for more fiscal spending. And so that combination of tighter monetary, looser fiscal tends to be very positive for a currency. And put that in perspective for you is that just what a run the Canadian dollar has been on. The Canadian dollar has appreciated now 9 consecutive days in a row. It's one of the longest streaks I've seen in the currency markets in quite some time. And that puts us, Canadian dollar still not at its best level for the year. The U.S. dollar is falling through the CAD 125 level today. But we've been down to, earlier this year, back in January, we were down closer to 134.5. And so I think that's where we're headed. It's quite a big move. And so that means that the momentum indicators are a bit stretched. I mean, it's a very sharp move to have such a streak like that. But again, the streak is being fueled by belief that Canada can raise rates 50 basis points before the Fed. The Fed doesn't move until, say, early May. Canada's going to move in a couple of weeks. And you got the commodity story, and you have this policy mix story. So I was talking to some other people. The big level to be keeping an eye on, it's not immediate, but down the road, this 120 level. I think that's where we're headed.
Okay. Well, that's some good notes on the Canadian Central Bank and their currency. And there has been strength in the commodity currencies. You also mentioned that the Aussie dollar was doing pretty good. You know, is there still an outlook from, and you follow the currency markets much closer than almost any guest we have, Mark, so I'd love to get your thoughts on this. Is there an outlook that some of these quote-unquote commodity currencies like the Aussie, like the Canadian dollar, are in a strong position, not just from their central bank monetary policy and not just from their fiscal spending, but also because the commodity markets themselves have been on a scorcher? I mean, oil prices are up, metal prices are up, agricultural prices are up. Is that underpinning some of the interest in the Aussie and the Canadian dollars?
Yeah, I think you're right there. I think it's the commodity, but it's not just the Aussie, Kiwi, Canada, but the strongest currency this year is Brazil. And they have high interest rates, much higher. In fact, their like overnight rate is near 11.75%, and you get commodity backed. And it's possible that the interest rate, that the tightening cycle, very aggressive peaks, maybe in over the summer. And so people can buy the bond, lock in a good yield, lock in a possibility of a capital gains, and a strong currency at your back. So I see widespread demand for Latin American currencies, which are high interest rates commodities backed, unlike, say, East Asia, which typically has low interest rates and they're net importers of commodities. So I think that this commodity story, coupled with the interest rate developments, also powerful force that's affecting not only the dollar block, and you think about the Aussie too, it's up 8 out of the past 10 sessions. And so and Brazil, like I say, has been on fire. Same thing with the Mexican peso. Even though it's not as commodity backed as some of the others, the interesting thing about Mexico, of course, it's a proxy for a lot of the other emerging market currencies and Latin American currencies, because it's the only emerging market currency that trades 24 hours a day. The Mexican peso is up for the 11th consecutive session today. And in my data, I can't find anything for the last 50 years, such a long streak for the Mexican peso. So broadly speaking, within the major currencies, the dollar block outperforms, and within emerging markets, LATAM outperforms. But there's a couple of other central banks that are also raising interest rates. It's kind of interesting as well. So because we know that China is looking for alternatives to the dollar, we saw some reports earlier this week, last week, about the Saudis maybe selling oil to the Chinese in RMB rather than dollars. But to me, the notable thing that happened is shortly after, that is by shortly, I mean 24 hours after the Fed raised interest rates, so did the Hong Kong Monetary Authority and so did the Saudi Monetary Authority. Both of those are the central banks, and they raised interest rates because they pegged their currencies to the dollar. So they may look for an alternative to the dollar. They may not like U.S. sanctions. At the end of the day, Hong Kong dollar is still pegged to the U.S. dollar, so is the Saudi currency. And because of that, they've essentially outsourced monetary policy to the Federal Reserve.
I think that's a pretty interesting point, Mark, and I'm glad you brought that up, because so goes the U.S. Central Bank, so goes Hong Kong, and so goes Saudi Arabia because of how they're pegged to the U.S. dollar. But there has been a lot of news, and there has been a lot of rumblings from the markets about how China and Russia may have kind of a new pact going on. You saw India buy oil from Russia in rupees. And so there's this trend in the markets for people to start trying to bypass some of the weaponized monetary policy by setting up their own trade agreements and trading in other alternative assets, either their other currencies or possibly in gold or possibly in, some people even were saying that they were trading in crypto to do some of this. So it's interesting to see some of these developments. But for right now, we still have King Dollar. And I'm interested to get your take on the dollar, because the U.S. dollar has pretty much held its own. It hasn't really budged a lot. It's up right currently at 98.78. So it's hanging out in that 98-99 zone. Is it getting top-heavy here, or what's keeping it elevated? If so many other currencies are making traction on the dollar, is it really the euro and the yen that are holding it up?
Well, I think that sometimes, you know, when we talk, sometimes I sort of see the dollar as an agent, as an actor in its own right. But sometimes the U.S. dollar sits at the fulcrum of like a big seesaw. And that's what I think is happening now. On one side of the seesaw, you got those commodity currencies. We talk about the dollar block, the Scandies. And the other side of the currencies, other side of the seesaw, we have the Japanese yen, which has weakened sharply. It's really been the weakest major currency this year. And it's not, in the markets, when we talk about taking the path of least resistance, the yen has really weakened. It's the weakest of the major currencies. I want to say that we're at levels we haven't seen in like 6 years. Since in the last 3 weeks, the yen has only strengthened on 2 days, and ironically, today is one of them. But I think that the so I think in general, I think the dollar sort of in this fulcrum, while you've got some weaker currencies and stronger currencies, I'm not so worried about what Russia and China are going to do. And here's why. This is one of the things I really love about the foreign exchange market. Size. Average daily turnover is about $6.6 trillion. And that number comes from the Bank for National Settlements, which does a survey every 3 years. You could Google it, BIS.org. They do this survey every 3 years. A new one is due out this year. $6.6 trillion a day. What this means is that in 1 week, the foreign exchange market turnover is enough to cover world trade for a year. Another way of thinking about it is in 3 weeks, the turnover in the foreign exchange market is enough to buy the world's GDP in a year. World GDP stays about $90 trillion. We do that in about 15 trading sessions, 3 weeks in the foreign exchange market. So what these numbers mean to me is that what ultimately drives the currency market is not like the zero hedge crowd tells us that a petrodollar or trade, not for a large diversified economy. I could see how that could work for Chile or Peru, but for the U.S., for Europe, for Japan, for Canada. I think the driver of the currencies has to do with the capital movement, not goods movement. It's the capital movement that really drives this. And so that's why I would look at things like interest rate differentials, the policy mix, things that attract investment. That's part of the problem why the Chinese currency is not used so much for trade. It's not very transparent. The currency is not convertible even. That means that you need to have permission if you're going to do something with it. The rules are not very visible, transparent. And so I think that I get the idea that nobody likes a monopoly. Everybody wants an alternative. But it's sort of like the alternative still is not there, not in a compelling fashion. And so because of that, I go back to this idea that behind the U.S. dollar is the U.S. Treasury market, transparent, open markets. And I think that that is really the key for the dollar. And if you say, well, going forward, Saudis will be taking other currencies for their oil, that's fine. But you saw what happened when Russia selling Indian oil in rupee, they benchmarked it to U.S. dollars. They still really can't escape the role of the dollar as its benchmark. And so I get it. People want to look for an alternative. I just don't think there's a really compelling one. And I don't think it really makes that much of a difference to the day-to-day movement of the dollar, which I think can be explained by interest rate differentials and those kind of factors more than a trade or what currency is really being invoiced.
Well, some great thoughts there on the currency markets, Mark. And yeah, it is interesting. The U.S. dollar is at the fulcrum of a teeter-totter between the commodity currencies on one side and the euro and the yen on the other. And it also highlights the points you just made are pretty astounding, just the size and the scale of the foreign exchange markets, just how huge they are, that in a couple of weeks they could buy up the global world GDP. I mean, it just goes to show how massive the currency markets are. They're some of the biggest markets on the planet. So always like getting your thoughts on that. Well, just as we wrap up, we want to talk about the news on tap for next week. We've already kind of mentioned the U.S. jobs report numbers that are going to be coming out, and all eyeballs will be on that. But you had two other news points you wanted to highlight. I'd love you to go over that with our audience.
Yeah, sure. So next week, I'd say it's a high-frequency data highlights. We get the Chinese PMI, and we know because of the lockdowns over COVID, higher commodity prices, that the Chinese economy is weak, and we could see composite PMI fall below the 50 boom bust level. China's weak. They're promising us some more stimulus, and that's what we're really waiting for. Second sort of news item besides China, we go to Japan. They have a Tankan survey. That's the Bank of Japan's sort of official quarterly survey. And as you know, the Japanese have here in Q1 hit by a earthquake and also COVID, and their economy could very well contract, possibly stagnate, but more likely contract here in the first quarter. The Tankan survey is going to show that the quarter ended with very weak momentum. And maybe I point out this about the yen too. People want to know where is it? You know, in a sword fight, they say when you feel mush, push; feel steel, retreat. And right now, I think the market, investors are feeling mush. No one's complained about the yen's weakness. And the yen is at new 7-year lows against the U.S. dollar today. So where's the pain threshold? Some people suspect it could be close to 125, and they base that because back in 2015, Bank of Japan Governor Kuroda mentioned something about the 125 level as an important level. We got up to almost 126 then. Today we're trading around 122. And just earlier today, Kuroda, the Bank of Japan governor, said that the weakness of the yen was still giving positive impulses to the Japanese economy. So we've got the Chinese PMI, we've got the Japanese Tankan report. We also should be looking for, you know, they target the 10-year yield at 25 basis points. They don't want to get above there under the yield curve control. And earlier today, we were testing 23 basis points. So next week, we could see the BOJ forced to defend its yield curve control. And the last data highlight, besides the U.S. jobs data, will be the Eurozone. They'll report the CPI data. It'll be the first look at March CPI. And everybody's talking about how it's going to be accelerating inflation on a trend basis because of the base effect from last year. It could actually soften. And by base effect, last March, Eurozone CPI rose by 0.9%. That means that anything less than that means that the year-over-year rate, the 12-month rate, softens. It doesn't change the fact that the market is looking for about 40 basis points of tightening from the ECB late this year, late Q3, early Q4.
Well, I do think those are some great news data points to be following along with. See how the international markets react, see how the currency markets react. And we'll keep an eye on what these central banks are doing too, Mark. So it's always great getting your thoughts here on the KE report. Always look forward to picking your brain on what you're looking at in the currency markets and in the central banking monetary policy. So thanks for spending some time with us. Have a great end of the week and looking forward to our conversation again next week.
Good. Thank you. Good luck to everybody.